Welcome, everybody, to the Brighteon.com exclusive interview with war correspondent, former Special Forces, Michael Yon, beside me here. Thank you for joining me in studio, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
It's always awesome to speak with you. We just came from the InfoWars studio. We did a segment on with Alex Jones, and then you're going to be on his show again another time because Alex was just blown away by your knowledge and information. I think our audience is very familiar with you because we've done a couple of interviews before, but could you give a quick introduction of what you are about and what you focus on?
Yes. I just got in from the Darien Gap, which is the jungle area between Colombia and Panama, because it's a major migration route to the United States. And I'm a war correspondent. In the past, I did a lot of combat work back when I was, very skinny, like a monkey, and going to, Iraq 2 years, Afghanistan 2 years, and then quite a lot of other places as well. And finally got kicked out of Hong Kong by the CCP just before the pandemic kicked off. And now I'm tracking food and energy and migration issues.
So we have a lot to cover, Michael. You're my favorite person to interview about all these issues because you know so much. I mean, we can talk about BASF in Germany. We can talk about fertilizer, the Haber-Bosch process. We can talk about famine, food shortages, logistics, transportation, all of it. We have so much to cover and we're under such a threat right now. In fact, the main takeaway from the interview that you and I just did on Infowars.com, you said, we are at war. What did you mean by that?
We're clearly in a state of war. CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, has been at war, an open war with the United States for many years. They don't hide it. It's right in everybody's face. In fact, they're disgusted with us how easy we are to beat. They're the sort of people that get disgusted by someone who's easy to beat.
Wow. And they just have no respect at all.
No respect whatsoever. And you see WEF, the World Economic Forum, as they call it in Netherlands, WEF. WEF and the CCP are conjoined. They're co-sanguinated. They are inseparable. And they have been since the early days. And so you can't talk about CCP and WEF as if they are partners. They are Siamese twins. Uh-huh. Right. And so you see this war, evil has a habit of telling you exactly what it's going to do. For instance, Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. They will tell you what they're going to do. And then typically people don't believe it. Pol Pot, so many others, Mao, and then they actually do it. Stalin, long right. list.
No, that's crazy. You're right. It's all out in the open right now. The famine, the planned depopulation that's already underway, the chemical bomb that just was ignited over Ohio, right? And the mass migration into this country that you've talked about so much, which is these military age males that are crossing through by the thousands. Tell us about what you saw in the Darien Gap recently. I know you visited there many times. You've taken a lot of important people to go witness that. What did you see at your most recent visit?
Well, a lot of Chinese are coming through Darien Gap. Let me explain what Darien Gap is for sure. Those who haven't heard of it. Darien Gap is a very intense jungle. Highway 1 goes from Alaska all the way to Tierra del Fuego at the tip of South America. And there's one gap. So you could take a motorbike, as many people have done, and start in Alaska or from the south and go all the way to the other side of the world almost, except for this one gap called the Darien Gap. There's about 63 miles of no roads between Yavitsa, Panama, where I was at just a few weeks ago, and Turbo, Colombia, right? And that's where the road resumes or ends, depending on which way you're going. So migrants or invaders, depending on what sort they are, come from all over the world, and they go through the hourglass funnel of South America. They will come from all over Africa, all over Asia. I'm meeting people from 140 different countries, right? Wow. And many people now from South America. And they feed through Colombia, and then they come through the Darien Gap. Once they get to the other side of the Darien Gap, the United States is facilitating this. We are openly facilitating this. This isn't hidden. This isn't conspiracy theory. This isn't me going out on a limb. We are openly doing it. Secretary Mayorkas went down there last year. I was waiting for him when he went. I got a tip off that he was going. So I was on about the fourth day. He landed in front of me in three Blackhawks. I immediately put my drone in the air. When they landed, I didn't endanger them. And then and they went to a camp, San Vicente camp, and they've now doubled the size of that camp.
So was Mayorkas there to oversee his success in his plot to replace the American people?
Success and increase the flow.
Yeah, so to increase the flow.
Right now, it's about 1,000 people per day, right? And just as I was in the green room at while you were on with Alex Jones a couple of hours ago, I saw a report that just came out that they estimate about 60,000 children will come through the Darien Gap this year, which would seem like an underestimate.
But you mentioned 1,000 a day, and that number is also increasing. Now, we know from people like Ed Dowd, I know you know of Ed Dowd's work on vaccines and the disabilities and deaths, that there are about 7,500 Americans each day who are killed or disabled, i.e. taken out of the workforce based on the vaccines. So 7,500 Americans per day, boom, gone, and then 1,000 plus per day coming in to replace. I mean, am I exaggerating? Is that my imagination, or are we being replaced?
It's a clear replacement strategy. They're open about it. They're open about it in Europe as well, where I'll be heading back over to Europe very shortly. I'll go on with you tomorrow again, and then I'll be flying over to
Alex. You're going to be with Alex tomorrow.
I'll be with Alex Jones tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, and then I'm going on with Jordan Peterson over in Netherlands. We did a show on this last year from Netherlands and went viral. So he wants me to go back. That's how important this is. The people of Europe can see it. They're being overwhelmed by migration, right? Now, we see huge amounts of mainland Chinese coming through the Darien Gap now. 2 years ago, I wasn't seeing that. I would hear about Chinese. There'd be onesies and twosies, but I never actually physically saw them. Now I see Chinese every day, 50 to 80 every day.
But could it be, let me just play devil's advocate for a second. Could it be that these are Chinese people fleeing the CCP who love America, they want to become Americans, they share the American spirit, and that's the only way they can get in, and they're just good people who would be great for America. Is that a possibility?
That's a possibility, and some of them probably are. And then there's others to me that look like military people, right? And I'm with military people all the time. I was this morning before I went on the show. Every day I start my day and end my day practically every day with military people. As you know, I was a war correspondent. I was a special forces soldier myself. I know what military people look like, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the people coming through Darien Gap, they're not looking at their shoes. They're not shuffling along like somebody going, they're coming, they look like soldiers to me. They're alert, they're looking around, they're very fit, they're young guys. Some of them are a little older, but they're still military age. Most of the people coming through Darien Gap and most of the people coming over the southern border, all the people from Darien end up coming over the southern border if they make it that far. Actually, 39 died about a week ago. The bus ran off, the bus hit another bus and they blew off the road. But they had just left the Darien Gap. It was actually a migration bus that we pay for.
Well, I know you've trained, I mean, you've been around a lot of military people. You are a former military yourself, and you've been around a lot of military dogs. And my military dog, where did he go? Rhodey, I think he's around here. He fell in love with you immediately. He was jumping all over you in the green room over at InfoWars.
He was purring, and he's a killer.
Yeah, he was purring.
I've never heard a dog purr before.
No, he purrs because you were wearing this poncho, and he likes comfortable clothing.
I love my poncho.
Yeah, he really
People
fell in love with your
poncho.
People make fun
of my poncho, but your dog loves it.
No, he loves it, man. He just wants to take that poncho and just live with it or something, I think.
Yeah.
But he liked you immediately.
Yeah, he died. Dogs know when you like dogs. I grew up with dogs. When I was a child, our first dog was a German Shepherd. Her name was Duchess, and she was kind of my babysitter. You know, I was a little kid, and she would, if I tried to leave the yard, she'd knock me down and drag me back.
Really?
We would ride her like a horse. I love Duchess.
Oh, that's awesome.
Except when she would drag me back, she wouldn't let me leave, and it was, I'd cry and all that.
Well, I want to ask you too, how can people reach you? Where can people follow your work?
I'm on locals.com. So it's Michael Yon. Locals.com. My last name is Yon, Yankee Oscar November, Y-O-N.
Okay.
And also on Twitter, it's Michael_Yon, and Getter, which is Michael Yon 1776.
Okay. And are you going to be posting on your channels on your next trip? You're going to meet Jordan Peterson again. You post all the time.
Every day. Every day I'm on Locals. Unless I'm out deep in the jungle or something. But let's say 98% of the time I will post even from the jungle.
Okay.
If I can get a sat hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, thanks for keeping me posted. Michael sends me a lot of little videos often of what's happening and snippets and things like that. I appreciate your intel.
You see things other people don't see.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, folks. And if you want to support us at healthrangerstore.com, we've got Radiance Blend in stock now, which is a blend of superfood seeds And sprouts, we've got broccoli sprout powder, which contains right here the sulforaphane and the indole-3 carbinol. It's actually freeze-dried broccoli sprouts in a powder, which is extremely potent. I drink that every day in my smoothie. We've got annatto vitamin E, which is necessary to flood your cell membranes, which are lipids, fatty acids on the outside of your cells. You need vitamin E because people are eating too many seed oils, cheap seed oils, which are oxidants, right? And these are antioxidants that are fat soluble that replace the soy oil, the corn oil, the margarines, and all that garbage. So that's critical. And then finally, we've got broccoli sprouts in a capsule format right here. So all that available, healthrangerstore.com. That helps us fund this studio and all the various things that we do. And we thank you for your support and thank you for your patience, Michael, as we're going through that. You've got some of our, you know, food and stuff too.
I do.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been talking with Doc Chambers. We're talking about getting together and just having a cookout one day, cooking here and sending you a video.
Oh, that'd be fun.
He's coming back from East Palestine today. Should be here tomorrow, I hope.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was texting me. We got to get him on as soon as he's detoxed from the visit. He needs to have like a detox shower or something. Because he was in East Palestine. Wasn't he meeting with some folks there?
Yeah, and I think he's bringing back a flag to you, right?
That's right.
That's got soot on it or something.
Yes. Right. You know, it turns out that the dioxins, they mix with smoke. And one of the signs, I learned this in studying recently, one of the signs that you've had dioxin poisoning in a town is you get these things that are called like black spider webs in the corners of buildings and things, but they're not spider webs. They're actually the ionized smoke cloud strings of particles from the dioxins combining with particles. I mean, I don't know the best way to describe it, but they look like spider webs.
Okay, so these are actually on the walls or?
Yeah, they're like, they're on the corners. You'll find them in the corners of outdoor structures. And you'll think like, why did a spider build a black spider web? And it's not, it's a dioxin string structure.
Okay, so, but it looks like a spider web. But so if I go to a light colored building, because will it be dark?
It'll be dark.
Okay.
It'll look black.
Okay.
Yeah, if you go to a light colored building and you see like a black web, you know, up in a corner or anywhere, that's a dioxin web.
But it'll typically be in a corner or?
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, because that's kind of where the particles slow down as they're blowing through.
Oh, I see. It's like an eddy there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then they'll ionize, the ionization causes them, it's almost like static electricity attaches things, you know, mm-hmm. and it'll attach as kind of like strings and it looks like a spider web.
Well, that's really important to tell the people in East Palestine
and
downwind.
Yeah, absolutely.
To take photos of that.
Yeah. If you see black spider webs on your buildings and structures, it's dioxin poisoning. Yeah.
Please start publishing any photos like that.
No kidding.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. When you were on with Alex, you talked about how poisonous, toxic this dioxin is. I wanted to know more about that.
Well, it's the single most toxic substance that has ever been created by humankind. Okay. It is many orders of magnitude more toxic than glyphosate or even VX nerve gas. I mean, even compared to chemical weapons, phosgene and whatever else, or mustard gas, this is many times more toxic, but it's a toxicity that's not necessarily acute. It doesn't necessarily kill you right in this instant. It kills you through total disruption of the physiology of the human body. It interferes with almost every function, endocrine, reproductive, cardiovascular, nervous system function, metabolism, cognitive, everything. And it's called the perfect poison because you practically can't destroy this molecule. But we're talking quadrillionths of a gram. That's far less than one drop, right? I mean, it's like, you know, 100,000 times smaller than a drop on your skin is your maximum lifetime exposure.
While you were on with Alex Jones, I was looking up books on dioxin from what you were saying.
Yeah.
And one of the books called it the perfect poison.
Perfect poison. It's the perfect poison because I don't know. Did you see the molecule that I showed on there? It has chlorine on the four corners of the molecule. It's got two oxygens in the middle. And I accidentally left that whole thing over on Alex's desk, but otherwise I would have it here. But it's got chlorine on the four corners. The chlorines are like the armor. Chlorine repels water, right? It repels things. The chlorine compounds are what make nonstick cookware. It's also what makes Teflon, like if you buy even, like rain repellent clothing, it's treated with something that causes the rain, you know, to bead up and roll off. Those are chlorinated compounds.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's all chlorine. Chlorine has that extraordinary property, which is very useful in many things like rainproofing or like having beakers in the lab that we have that have a kind of a chlorine compound coating so that no liquid stays in the beaker. Because like if you measure out 100 milliliters and you want to pour out 100 mils, you don't want 99. You don't want like 1 milliliter left in the beaker. So they're chlorine treated and then all the water slides out, you see.
So this could have just poisoned potentially millions. Would that be an overstatement?
Millions of people.
And rendered off limits a lot of our farmland.
For centuries. For centuries. If anybody bothers to test for dioxins, right now, I have no doubt you're going to find dioxins in that area are probably, I'm just guessing, 1,000 times higher than normal, quote, normal background levels. I mean, nothing's normal with dioxins and they shouldn't be there at all. But there is a background level of just, you know, on all the soil, on the whole world because of backyard fires and house fires and industrial incineration and so on. So these dioxins have settled on all the land.
And all smoke is toxic.
Well, all smoke is toxic, but dioxin smoke is like insanely toxic.
And what causes the dioxin to be released or formed?
When you burn a chlorinated compound, when you burn it, burning is a process of chemical oxidation. The oxygen actually during that low temperature combustion combines with the chlorine compounds and it forms a new molecule, which is the dioxin. So it's actually created during combustion.
So did those dioxins exist before they burned the train?
No.
So they created the dioxin by burning the train?
Yes, they created the dioxins by burning the train. The dioxins did not exist, except maybe at very, very minuscule levels, because they had vinyl chloride monomer, which is the liquid form, non-poly, and then they had the polyvinyl chloride, which is PVC, which is a solid, right?
I'm curious if, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, I'm just trying to explain.
So they had the liquid and the solid. You've got my mind going a million miles
an hour now. Those two substances by themselves are not inundated with dioxins. When you burn them, you create dioxins. When they set fire to that, they basically unleashed a chemical bomb that synthesized dioxin chemicals.
I'm curious if there were more train cars this time than normal. My mind is going wild with
it. Was 150 cars, which was too many.
Is that more than normal for these sorts of chemicals?
Oh yeah.
You know, I checked the wind as soon as this happened. I checked the wind, of course. As a work correspondent, I'm constantly checking wind direction and speed, right?
Check with your train contacts, railroad contacts. They normally want to run 80 cars or less.
And it was 150.
150. Mm. And you can imagine, so all that momentum of all those cars pushing into the vinyl chloride that was there to create a worse accident.
And so many other coincidences, such as the movie, the testing. There's a lot of strange things going on here.
And the hot box detector that's supposed to be on the side of the railroad that detects when axles are on fire, that failed.
Hmm. Interesting, because there was something burning way back down the line, it appears.
Yeah, for like 20 miles,
right?
It was burning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the railroads, and I interviewed a railroad, you know, hazardous response incident expert on this point. And he said, yeah, all the railroads have these hot box detectors because they no longer run cabooses. And the job of the guy in the caboose, you know, back in the day was to watch all the axles and spot the fires. Like that, when the train would turn a corner from the caboose, you could see all the axles. You're like, it's on fire, you know, and you stop the train. They got rid of the cabooses and they put these sensors on the side of the tracks that detect the hot boxes.
Oh,
those sensors failed.
How many sensors failed?
Only one failed.
But I wonder what's the interval between sensors?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. You would imagine they would have a sensor every, you know, maybe 5 miles or better, you would think, right?
Very strange.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it does not look accidental.
Yeah.
Especially given the context of so many other things the movie, the other fires.
The attacks on the food infrastructure.
There's another fire going on now. I didn't mention to you because we were busy.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's anyway, it clearly something's wrong.
Clearly, like you said, we are at war. Like there's a war being waged against us, but it's a war that's undeclared. They pretend that there's no war while they're killing us with chemicals and famine and perhaps nuclear war and everything else.
They've done everything short of saying we're actually at war with you. They have, I mean, they have said, when I say they, Chinese Communist Party, Unrestricted Warfare is a good book to read. Written by two PLA officers, the People's Liberation Army colonels, and also the WEF, again, the World Economic Forum, who are conjoined, right?
Yeah.
They are openly at war with us. They don't even hide that they're pushing all these migrants in. They don't hide that they're going to disrupt the food supplies and the energy supplies exactly. And reduce the global population, which they're succeeding at this point.
So that's the thing. And then, so you and I are people who are very well informed. I mean, I'm just saying what it is. You're super well informed. People tell me I'm well informed, but we live among a population of people, even if they're bright, even if they're high IQ, like engineers and doctors and lawyers, they are uninformed. They are ignorant of this war that's being waged against them.
They're busy.
They're busy, right. They're doing other things.
They got kids to take care of. And that's, I mean,
yeah,
that's why we're on Global Recon.
Right. Or they're working on their PhD and you and I are sitting here trying to say, yeah, but you're going to die if you don't understand what's happening. You know, you're being exterminated. You know, forget about your PhD for a minute and try not to die because, you know, chemical bombs are being unleashed over your skies.
Right. And, you know, none of these things happen without a lot of signals. There's a lot of signals. Like, for instance, you can clearly see the famine signals are building because it's all about conditions. It's not about sparks, right? When the conditions are set, the spark will always come. There's always sparks, right? I mentioned this to you one time before, like, you know, how much time I spent in the jungles of Darien Gap. You could have an entire firework factory blow up down there and there would be no jungle fire because it's a rainforest.
Right.
There'll be a smoking crater, fire will go out in a couple hours, it'll be over. But one little spark somewhere, you know, in a forest that's had, you know, that's got a big fuel load and it's dry and it's going to go up, right?
Exactly.
And that's the same when you study famine, you'll see it's all about conditions, right? Well, there are some famines that can happen more suddenly, for instance, from volcanic eruptions. For instance, three of the major famines in Japan have been from volcanic eruptions or from war when an enemy cuts off your food supply or you're busy fighting and your farmers aren't farming. Uh-huh. But generally speaking, you can spot famines very far off if you're tuned in.
Right. But again, we have this population that is not seeing the signals that you're talking about, right? So they're there. I mean, it's obvious to anyone paying attention.
Signals are everywhere.
They're everywhere. But people are like, oh, but you know, there's must-see TV on at 9 p.m. or whatever.
Right. For instance, this time, we're not just seeing an increase in food prices. It's beyond that, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about a decrease in actual supply. We're talking a decrease in actual transportation as well, right? And we're talking about intentional destruction of, for instance, I'm heading to Netherlands after we do our interviews to go back on with Jordan Peterson. The WEF, the World Economic Forum, is destroying Dutch farmers. There's about 52,000 Dutch farmers. They own about 62% of the land in Netherlands. And the World Economic Forum is blatantly open that they're going to take their farmland.
Yes.
And they're blaming stikstof, which in Dutch language means nitrogen, right? Now, right next door in Germany, they blame the carbon dioxide. So that border between Netherlands and Germany, which they border each other, you know, here it's stikstof, there it's carbon dioxide, right? And they're taking the German farms as well, and the Belgians, and so many others.
But see, that, I mean, that's what's extraordinary to me is the excuses for shutting down the farms are so lame.
And tailor-made.
Yeah, but you, I mean, how does anybody fall for this? Oh, nitrogen is bad, carbon is bad. Well, nitrogen grows our food, carbon is what we're made of. How can you say that carbon and nitrogen are bad? And how do people even believe that? But they do. They fall for it. They say, oh, we want to save the planet. Well, that means you have to go destroy yourself because you're made of carbon.
You know, I read a lot of old books. You and I have talked about books quite a few times. And I read very old books often. And what's very interesting is you'll see people centuries ago talking about the climate, constantly talking about the climate. That's one of those pandemic, right? And famine. These are the things that we as humans talk about, right? So you'll see people in books that are 200 years old or whatever talking about the earth is heating up, the earth is cooling down. This is something we naturally talk about. Yeah. So if you're an information warrior, and remember, information war is the PhD level of warfare, all the kinetics with the firefights and all that, that's junior high school level. Doesn't seem like junior high when you're in it. Trust me, I've done it for years. Yeah. But the real high level of warfare is information war. And so you'll want to tap into natural lines that people already resonate with, which would be disease, famine, and the weather. And look what we do with global warming, right? Before, remember, it was global cooling.
Cooling, right.
Right.
So you're saying that what the globalists are doing is tapping into existing neurological pathways where people are naturally concerned about, you know, big things, again, pandemics, war, and famine. But then the globalists hijack those concepts to push their agenda, which is an anti-human agenda.
Absolutely. Using the fear, to lock down on us, lock down on our, and obviously destruction of our food supplies. You know, watch out for the eggs. They'll cause some kind of problem now, which is ridiculous. I bought a lot of powdered eggs in the year 2020, actually, 3 years ago now, yeah, which are still good. Because back then it sounded crazy, but I was saying openly, I think we're setting conditions now for famine. I started saying that in January and February and March of 2020, because remember, pandemic, famine, war always go together. If you get a big pandemic or a big famine or a big war, you will always get the other two without any exception at all. And again, I mentioned this on when we were on the Alex Jones show earlier, is that I was on an interview and one of my kind readers, mentioned to me that I talk about pandemic, famine, war as if I made it up. Panfa war, that's what I call it. I said, I did. She goes, no, it's in the Bible. And I said, oh yeah, that's right. It's the four horsemen. They wrote it down 2000 years ago.
True.
I mean, this is something our ancestors and everybody watching this, all of our ancestors have been through famines. Everybody watching this, all of our ancestors have been through a lot of wars and a lot of pandemics and human osmotic pressure, that push and pull of migration. All of us, we're all products of these things.
Well, you're right, which also means we're all survivors of this, or at least our ancestors were survivors, and we're going to have to be survivors again. But you mentioned war. Let me ask you this then. Putin just gave a significant speech in which he accused the West of attempting to destroy Russia.
We are trying to destroy Russia.
The West is trying to. And the nuclear protocol that Russia has adopted is that they will use nuclear weapons if they feel like their existence is threatened. It seems to me, and I want your comments on this, but it seems to me that Putin just came out and said that the existence of Russia is threatened. Doesn't that, by their own logic, invoke their internal justification for their use of a first strike of nuclear weapons against the West?
Well, I've been saying since the beginning of the war that I thought the United States might actually do a first strike on Russia. And, you know, it's one of those lines of reasoning that I could not defend in a court of law, but it's just intuitive, right? Yeah. And it's just got all the hallmarks of we might do something ourselves in advance. And for the same reasons. Hey, that guy's going for his gun. I got to go for mine, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
But do you think Putin is going to actually initiate either maybe non-nuclear, maybe thermobaric weapons, you know, fuel air explosive, hypersonic missiles? What do you think he's going
to
do?
I think he's doing his best not to. He actually is the rational one in the room, which is strange to say as an American, especially as a former special forces soldier who on two A teams spent my whole time learning how to kill Russians, right?
Right.
And to see the Russians as not the actual aggressors this time is quite strange, right?
Right. But of course, the mainstream media describes Russia as the only aggressor somehow, and that America is just defending freedom in the world.
Right. Now, of course, by saying that the Russians are not aggressors, somebody's raising their hand, of course, but they invaded Ukraine. I get it. Trust me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was a lot more to this context. There's no truth in the world without context.
True.
You have to take everything in context. Ukraine wants to become a full NATO member and we want to put military there in Ukraine. That's like China putting the Chinese army in Mexico and Canada, right?
Right.
That would be grounds for war with Canada and Mexico.
Well, and what else is interesting, and I asked you about this, Nord Stream pipeline, America, it looks conclusive to me, America blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, which was an act of war against a U.S. ally, against Germany and Western Europe, which is impacted by that lack of cheap, abundant energy from Russia. So not only is there a war happening, but America has waged war on Germany. Seems like Germany should invoke Article 5 against America for, like, they attacked us.
Article 5, you know? For the people that might not be tracking, is, you know, basically the Three Musketeers provision, one for all and all for one for NATO, right?
Right.
So that would actually be the United States has attacked NATO, which means we've attacked ourselves.
Right.
Which actually we literally have.
The U.S. has attacked a NATO member. Because that's, you know, you blow up the energy infrastructure that provides for the economy and the industry of an entire nation. I mean, that's an act of terrorism, if not war.
And again, the creation of nitrogenous fertilizers, which is vital for food supply.
Yeah, I wonder if the starving Europeans coming up are going to realize that that's because the U.S. blew up Nord Stream.
Some are already starting to gather. You know, it's clear that some others are. Don't seem to get it yet, what just happened. Again, Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 2 was never actually flowing. It was pressurized, but Nord Stream 1 was vital for companies like BASF.
But the reason Nord Stream 2 wasn't flowing was because of U.S. interference. They pressured Germany to have the regulatory controls to never open Nord Stream 2.
It's very strange feeling for me as an American, especially as somebody who deep down inside is still an American soldier, to not see the Russians as the complete bad guy at all. It looks defensive in nature to me, what they're doing. Now, keep in mind, Ukraine and Russia, they fight. I mean, I call that the white people Middle East, right? I mean, this is, it transcends all, you know, they fight and they're gonna fight no matter what, right? So are we gonna get involved in every fight around the world? We seem to want to at this point.
Yeah, but we're running out of munitions. So very soon we won't be able to fight any war, not even a domestic war, because we will have burned up all our munitions over in Ukraine and then there's nothing left and we don't have the factories that even exist to replace that.
Yeah, while CCP, Chinese Communist Party, goes for Taiwan.
Right,
Okinawa.
Exactly.
You know, which is obviously Japan.
Or partners with the cartels and comes up through our border.
Which they're doing. And by the way, Border Patrol friend told me today that 22,000 Russians have come through since October. 22,000 Russians. We talked about Chinese, but I didn't talk about Russia. There's a lot of Russians coming now as well. And they're mostly military age males.
Okay. We got to wrap this up today, Michael. This is truly fascinating. And I want you to give out your website once more. But we got to have you back on. I know you're about to travel again. Next time you're back in Texas, will you stop by again?
Let's do it tomorrow.
Well, no, but I mean,
yeah, definitely.
You're going on 100%. With Alex tomorrow, which is great. Yeah. But next time after your trip, come back in studio here.
100%. And of course, as you know, I don't want to say on air that some of the things I'm going to do, but I'm going to go to Netherlands first.
Yeah. Don't give out all your intel, like if it compromises your personal security.
I'll be careful with that.
Yeah. Or take my dog with you. He's around here. And
I would take
He him. Likes you.
By yeah, get him on the airplane.
Yeah. No, you can get on the airplane. Just buy him a ticket. He'll sit right next to you. All right. So the website for Michael Yon, you're on locals.com.
Yeah.
So again, that's Michael Yon, YON.locals.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Michael Yon at locals.com. YON Yankee Oscar November. A lot of people mix that up with Young, but it's Yon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not necessarily a common last name that people are familiar with, but it's Y-O-N. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. I appreciate what you do and how you're working to educate and uplift people around the world.
It's a great honor to come on. I appreciate the invitation and I want to come back on very soon.
Well, you're welcome anytime. Let me know when you're back in town.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Michael. All right. Thank you for watching, folks. I'm Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform that we created so that we can have conversations just like this without censorship. You won't find a lot of this stuff on YouTube. No matter whose channel it is, you got to go to Brighteon.com or other alternative platforms. Feel free to repost this interview on other platforms as well. You have our permission. And just give credit to Michael Yon and his locals.com account. Thank you for joining us today. Again, I'm Mike Adams. God bless you all, and God bless America. Take care.